We'll see how this is going to go. Natalie and I met for a few hours, or all 2.5 hours of the day. And in that time, I took 6 pages of typed notes, and then she texted me later, oh, about all this other stuff, I got 2 more hours of stuff. And so, we'll be serving lunch in the middle of this. Natalie's just going to be through picture and through her own telling some of what happened in Israel. And so I will be the bad guy that pushes things along, but I highlighted some of the things I was hoping that Natalie could hit when she was talking with you this morning. And maybe talk first this, some of her trip that she went on for there about the rabbinical style of teaching as you guys...
Okay. Yeah, the teaching pastor that was leading our trip, he called it a rabbinical style, which basically means we don't know where we're going at any point in time. So
He knows
where we're going. But he was sort of took on the role as rabbi for the 2 weeks that we were there. And we were just supposed to follow him. And so yeah, it was interesting. Sometimes he would like do certain things to see like how far like down the line it would make it if the people in the back were getting, like he picked up a rock and like the first few, you know, maybe 10 people had a rock in their hand at the end of the journey that we were on and the rest of us didn't. And so he's like, what happened? You know, I picked this up and it just showed like how much like how important it is like the person who's walking in front of you, how their walk needs to be just like the rabbi's walk as well, because people are looking to you to know who he is. And of course, we all need to be seeking Jesus for ourselves, but at the same time, know that people are looking out how we live out our faith and how that, yeah.
Could you tie that in, and I don't know how quickly you find a picture of the sheep and the goats? And how the sheep would form up as opposed to how the goats would form up.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of how Paul talked about follow me as I'm following Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Have I taken too much out of order?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's okay.
Where it is in this lineup. We might stumble upon it.
Okay. That's okay. Yep. Yep.
Okay. So we will start at 8:30. Okay. So I'm taking you to 8:03, which is I'll show you a couple of these pictures. Which is an underground community that's in the Shephela. It's like in between Jerusalem and the coast, so it's in the before you get to the mountains. But it's an underground community, and they built like a ton of, you know, they had a ton of stuff underground, and we were just looking at their little houses and things. But what we were talking about in this particular experience is we looked at Genesis and how looking at the relationship of Adam and Eve and how God created them for each other, and not only like a marriage relationship, but in all relationships, we can kind of look at this and see how God said, this is your Ezer Kenego, which is your help, but also someone who's standing facing you. So not only someone who's encouraging you and struggling with you and not against you, but someone who's standing facing you, like they provide like a confrontation or kind of like a that kind of aspect and keeping you accountable, but and there's like, so it kind of creates that tension, but it's not like always, we talked about how it's not always about like kind of resolving the tension, but it's learning how to manage it and how to work together. And we just talked about how that's true living in community also, like in other relationships outside of marriage. So
can you imagine how the closer you stand to others, the easier it is to step on toes and how to manage.
yeah, this, to specify what this is an olive, ancient olive press, and it's basically, it's the second pressing. They're gonna put the olives in the bath, is kind of where the rat's feet are down by, and then the log coming out, they have weights on it. You can see, like, the, I can't really, there, weights, like, to weigh it down. That's the second pressing. It's the first one, they go from this one right here. But that's Gethsemane. So,
maybe to go over to
that's it, yeah. Okay.
Or if you hit the ibex. There you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, we talked about ibexes in our Angetti experience, but so I'll show you the picture of that later if it's further. But it's a place near the Dead Sea, and it's a living spring, so they call it living water, Ma'an Ha'im, and it's like rare to find, like, the you have to know, like, where the living water is in the desert, because that's, like, where the main source of water is, because it doesn't get much rain. And so it was kind of cool because we were talking about Psalm 42, about the deer panting for streams of living water, and how that would have been in the picture of this. And deer in the Hebrew is actually, it says goat, which would be like in the ibex family. So it's likely an ibex, but for our understanding, deer makes maybe more sense to us. But yeah, the ibexes are pretty fascinating because they have, like, very good feet and very good footing. So they can, like, I don't know if some of you saw, I posted, he mentioned he saw that I posted a picture of ibexes, like, scaling this almost vertical, like, dam wall. So they can, like, they can scale cliff faces, like, without, you know, flinching. And so we were talking about their, yeah, good agility and how their feet are so, I mean, they're perfectly placed, like, in that, and that's important to survive in the mountains. And so anyways, Brad was telling us a story, our teacher is Brad, our rabbi for the week. He was telling us a story about how when he was in En Gedi one time, and he saw an ibex, like, bolting down from above him, and then he realized, like, it's still coming and it's not stopping, and so he had to get out of the way just before it came by him. And it, like, went right to the water in En Gedi, where the living water is coming. And so he kind of gave us that picture that he had picture of what he had of Psalm 42 of how a deer pants for living water, and just, yeah. So that's, so I didn't really think I had to talk about this. Okay, so we saw the ibexes. We happen to see them on the way to our desert, which is, there's many words for desert in Hebrew, and this one is called Yeshimon, which is, just means, like, it's like a wasteland. There's nothing that can live here. And there's, like, life is impossible, basically. And this would have been, like, the kind of area where the conditions that the Israelites would have traveled in their 40 years of wandering. And so, we just love to, like, kind of make jokes or comment on, like, how we were so exhausted after hiking through here for 5 hours, and we had our nice hiking boots and our, you know, camelback water packs and stuff like that, so we were not, like, we didn't have to go without all of that stuff. And just imagining a large group of people having to, like, pass through here, it's unbelievable, but
it's not unreasonable to think about the people 40 years saying, let's go back to Egypt.
Yeah, right. It would have been, because, I mean, it was pretty, yeah, pretty good there. I mean, other than the slaves, like, they had, like, they had water, they had everything they needed. They had good farmland. Yeah. So this is us going down. And as we were stopping at three places, we were talking about Moses and how when he began his life in the palace, and Pharaoh's palace and how he was royalty, and how different that would have, like, life, yeah, I don't know, life-altering it would have been to all of a sudden find himself at 40 years old, and now he's in the desert, and he's a shepherd, and he's basically doing a job of, like, a, you know, 8 to 13-year-old girl. And so that's who the shepherds were, basically. The girls that were not yet marrying age were typically the shepherd of their family. And so just how kind of you, in Moses' mind, you just, like, wondered, like, how, if he would have felt like that was a promotion, or, like, kind of, like, what his mindset was, or, like, was he, like, okay, this is, you know, was he all for it? And just how we look at it, where we, or, like, we look at our own lives, and sometimes we think, like, yeah, we kind of went backwards, or we, we're not making, like, a leap of, like, we're not, like, becoming more successful, we're kind of, like, we feel like, oh, that was a step backwards or something, and just how we can kind of judge ourselves about how, like, the kind of work we're doing, the station in our life, and how others, we also, like, tend to, like, think about what do other people think of me, or, like, kind of that mindset. But also what I thought of, yeah, in this perspective is that we were talking about how Moses, he didn't think that he was fit for the job. And I think that's an interesting thing, because I remember doing like the how, what kind of leader we are, some kind of test here, like, before I went, and I can't remember what I got, but I remember, like, yeah, like, most of the people that, like, were, like, strong leaders got Moses, and, or, I mean, not strong leaders, but, like, I don't know, just, like, the people who were, just, I feel a little bit more natural about, I don't know, but anyways, that's off topic, but, we were talking about how God, Moses didn't think that he was fit, like, both, like, he got the wrong guy, like, God, and we were talking about his first experience with the Israelite slave that was being beaten, and how he responded. He didn't stand for that injustice, and he already had that, like, instinctive that, like, this isn't right, and he maybe acted and responded wrongly in our eyes, and probably not, I would assume, but at the same time, you look and he already has that, like, instinctiveness. And then also the second thing was the girls that were at the well, and he stood up for those girls who were being bullied or whatever by the other shepherds, like, in the well area. He got them their water and for their flocks, and just how that was already built into him, and God was already using him and preparing him for the things that he had in store for Moses. And so at 8 years old, he was really, you know, really just getting into his calling. Ultimate plan that God was. Okay, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, it's so great that we talked a few days earlier. Last night, I'm at the reception, and there was, even before that, the reception, and the pianist for it is this guy that had studied and went out to USC in California, and he came back, and now he's living at home. He said, you know, he used to have this view of success, of everything upwardly, you know, a mobile, and I realized that was not like that. And I was able to talk to him about, just what you said, about the Moses stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Dinner, lunch.
Some of the stuff that you miss as they flip through that we're not getting to is just, you know, Samson, and where the Spirit of God came upon him, and where David met Goliath, and all the different places to see him as they come alive. That's what you're missing by not getting the 3-hour version.
Okay, so we found our way to Timnah. Okay, so they had in, we're still in the Yeshimon Desert, but we found our way to Timnah, which is the south of Timnah. There's two Timnahs, but so this is the altar. They had an exact replica, like, size, scale to the appropriate size of the tabernacle. So there's the tabernacle, But so at this experience, we kind of talked about how we know it's like God's temple or His tabernacle is like the place they created a space for God, and how we filled that space, and how we transfer that to our lives, and how we create space for God, and do we create space for Him, and do we, like, where is the space? Is it in the center of our camp, or is it like in the corner, or outside of the camp, or whatever? And I guess that was
because the tabernacle was placed in the desert there, was at the center of all their tribes.
So, yeah, so God's presence was in the midst, in the center of them. And just like we were asking ourselves, like, where God is in our hands. And I guess that had a personal significance for me. But I think at the time when I first came to Israel, it was, yeah, I don't know where God was in my camp. Because I don't know, I felt like kind of a mess. And so, so that was kind of just a cool reflection that we had. So, I feel like I have to, like...
No.
Hurry.
No, you're fine. Around when you're talking to the midbar, the temple, the city, with the two altars.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so, the next day we had an experience in Arad, which is one of the big cities it's called the back door to Jerusalem. So it was a big, very important city to like fortify and to build up. And so Solomon did that. And so we're near the Dead Sea now. We're up a little bit, and we're still in the desert, but we're in a midbar, which is another word for desert, meaning like there's definitely plenty of fields here, and so you can grow stuff in this desert. So. When we're getting to Arad and we discover this temple, I mean, we didn't discover it, but it was already there. we're talking about this temple, and what's interesting is that it's the exact like setup of the temple in Jerusalem. So now we're in temple time now. So there's a temple in Jerusalem, and there's also a temple here, which is just a smaller scale of the temple in Jerusalem. And so, what they found, the archaeological dig found that in the Holy of Holies, there was two incense altars, one here, and so that's signifying that there's two different gods. And so I think there was an inscription on it, and I don't know which god it was, so I won't mention it, but so they had their god, but then they also had the god of the Canaanites who were there before them. And so we could see like how they weren't, like we talked about syncretism and how we kind of we don't want to give up God, our God, the God of Israel, but we also kind of like were like, well, it can't hurt to, you know, what we were thinking, like you guys, you know, because they have like a farm thing. So they probably wanted that god who was over that area, and so they took both. And we just talked about how in our lives today, like there are certain things that we don't want to give up, and that maybe is like another god to us. Or, walking in a straight, because a lot of what we were talking about is we randomly got caught in this battle with sheep flock. We were talking about how the sheep, we were noticing when we were watching the sheep walk along, that they were following one another, and they were, as they were going along, and the goats were kind of just scattered everywhere.
The shepherd, the sheep and the goats together.
Yeah.
And the goats would all go in their own different ways. And
yeah. So
you guys had some good pictures of the sheep all just all lined up.
But I don't know where I was. Yeah. And we also talked about, because Brad was saying he was so mad because people always refer to sheep as a dumb, like they're kind of just known as like a dumb animal or whatever. And he's like, they're not dumb. There it is. So there they are following, and those are out here wandering around. But and so we were talking about how, or he was saying, you know, they're not dumb. They're exactly the way that God made them, and they're dependent. They're very dependent animals. So they follow, you know, they're made to follow. And just so it's interesting, the scripture points out that there are sheep and goats.
And even back to that rabbinical style where you've got, you know, maybe one, you're following the sheep right in front of you. Just as Paul said, follow me and I'm following Christ.
Cal has highlighted it. He likes, I told him about this guy who, this 72-year-old man in life, but he was the oldest guy. And he's such a great photographer. I asked him a couple times to take pictures, and this is kind of what I got. He just didn't let go of
it.
So I was like, okay, I'm getting closer. And then so he got a hold of my camera a couple different times, and you can see that we got out of control. So this is the most famous cave 4. for, where they found, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls. And so this is where the Essene community lived. And a little bit about the Essene, they didn't like what was happening in the temple system in Jerusalem, so they created their own community out here in the desert, and they were just a group of maybe 150 men and a few women and children, and they were dedicated. We talked about how dedicated they were to, there was like a big scribe room, so they were, you know, copying the Torah scrolls, and so how dedicated they were to knowing God's word and preserving it. But at the same time, like, the criticism is that they weren't in relationship to anybody in the outside world. I mean, they were completely cut off from everyone, and they were just living in their own community and not being an influence or a light to anyone around them. And so how that can be,
No, what I thought was cool is that historical thing, you can back it up to K4, and correct me here if I'm wrong, but, you know, one of the big criticisms in the church for a long time is that the scriptures are postscript written, you know, to written later on, much farther after the event, and the Dead Sea Scrolls, is, we have this Bedouin, this boy out in the desert, he's throwing up, you know, playing around throwing rocks in caves, and he hears this, you know, crunch of clay pottery, and then they find these scrolls that date back farther than any manuscripts that they had, just to show authentically how that far back and how accurate the scriptures were. Some of these are just neat to see because of the historicity of them, like this next one about where Elijah met the priest.
Yeah.
Baal. Had a big confrontation there.
This is our hike up to Mount. When we were down here in the olive grove, he like ran up the mountain like to where we are now, where the picture is taken, and like started shouting at us like about like he was Elijah, and he was reciting what he was saying to the gods, the priests of the other gods, the heathen gods, or whoever. But
they gained a new appreciation for Elijah, who gone up and down that, they said Elijah, probably 18 miles in that day, 1,500 feet of elevation.
Nazareth is that city that we're looking at right there. And so they would have employed most likely all of the tectons and the builders in the area, in the Galilee area, to build this Roman city. And so we just kind of had to, like, we were kind of like thinking about how, you know, if Jesus was training with his father, if he could have been here and like built, helped him build like this Roman city. And so it was kind of, I don't know, it was unreal to like think about.
That's one of the translation things that gets lost a little bit, where we read sometimes carpenter in the scriptures more of a craftsman, and sometimes you're nothing as, and like I tell you, hardly anything is built with wood there, and it's the stonemason, the tectons. So these could have been the places where Jesus was working.
This is still Sepphoris, and you can see like where the, I thought that was cool that you can see where the path was the wagon road that was going indented in the pavement, but it was still. But anyway.
Okay.
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, so going, yes, I guess jumping to like what I was doing, most of the time that I was in Israel, I was in Jerusalem, and I was taking care of a home of about 17 people who were living in a home for disabled. It started out as a children's home, and but these people have been here their whole lives, so they're in the age range of 40 to 70 or something. So I was taking care of these people, and just their basic needs and throughout the day. A lot of them I would have to go to the hospital with, and for some I would have to go with them more, especially one woman who had breast cancer who was who I got really close to, because we would go get radiation together. I mean, I wouldn't go with
you. I'll go with you.
Praise God that she was cancer-free after that, but I missed our time together, so we had some good times. But it was just such a neat experience for me, and just, I don't know, being able to serve people who became like my friend, and my time there.
I didn't say anything ahead of time. If you got your bulletin sheet, if any of you wrote anything down, if whether you did or not, anything that Natalie was just talking about from any of those places or the messages from that really stuck out. I was going to make an alteration, but okay.
I didn't know about that shepherds were 8 to 13 year old girls, and I just feel like I need to reread the whole Bible. I don't know. There's just a lot of things.
And Isabel's like, yeah,
weird.
I do that. Every morning.
So, I mean, just Moses' whole story is different now, so I think that's really neat.
Any questions for Natalie? I would, if you could, you know, invite her out to lunch or something, and let her go.
I'll finish.
Go through all of those.
Yeah.
There's so many neat things that, just like Tim was saying, not only the history of it, but and this is where they were shepherds, and this is where this happened to stood on those spots. You know, one thing I just got, and I've told Natalie sometimes, it's in the sharing of your story, people will get stuff out of your story that you don't even intend to. So it's good, such a great thing to share your story with others. This has nothing to do with a trip, but I think of the God that we serve did go and take the radiation with us. He didn't just say, I'll be right here while you go and suffer. I'm going to go to the cross and be right with you. In fact, like, Alex, yeah.
I have a new respect for the early Christians after seeing the desert that they had to cross.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea it was that rustic and would be that difficult.
And what's the underground? What's the underground place? Of course, that wasn't the only one, but yes, yeah, and just through persecution and having to go underground, unbelievable, right? Yeah.
Okay, Natalie, you remember our conversation about citizenship? I just thought that was an amazing thing. Can you share that?
Okay, well, it's hard for non-Jews to get citizenship there because we're talking about modern people, It's because it was created to be a Jewish state, so it's hard for them to like let other not Jews in because they don't want to become the minority or they're not going to be like the, I don't know, the people in charge, and or it's going to become not their state again. And so it's very difficult. I mean, you can get visas, work visas, a lot of different visas, but anyways, but there was, I don't know who, maybe a group of rabbis or somebody found like some different tribes in Ethiopia and in India. And they were like practicing a lot of the Old Testament rituals and things like that in their the ways they worshiped and stuff like that. And so, in the way they like kept certain laws. And so they thought these are Jews, you know. So they brought them.
Queen Sheba, did they talk about that? Queen Sheba met with Solomon and took some of those practices back. Anyway,
okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, yeah. But yeah, so they took like loads of these people back to Israel, but what they found out that these people are actually Christians, like they're practicing, they're like Jews, but they are kind of Messianic. I don't know what you can call them that, but they don't call them that. But it's like they are Christians.
Right.
But they were practicing.
Right.
In a way that they thought they were Jews. So,
okay.
So after like finding out more about them, but they were already in the land, so now there's a ton of people there that they don't really know.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know from the original diaspora of all the Israelites leaving, now they're more and more coming back in. There used to be more Jewish people in New York City than
yeah.
in Israel.
Yeah.
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 And that's just a sign of the times, of the regathering of the tribe of Israel. So we gotta keep watching their net. Any plans on return trips or not yet?